The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, May 19th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. So this is awful news for baseball. Mike Trout has a grade 2 calf strain, his right calf, and he's expected to be out about 6 to 8 weeks. Here's Mike Trout speaking to reporters yesterday about what he was thinking at the moment he got hurt.
I knew it was bad when it happened. I've never felt anything like this before. When I felt the pop, I was just hoping, for the best. But once I started walking on it, just felt like a big cramp, and then I think after the adrenaline and the rush started, to wear off, it started hurting pretty bad. And just a little bump in the road. I'm really crushed about it because obviously it's out there, want to be out there with the guys, and it is what it is.
We're going to be talking about the injury coming up with Carl Ravitch. Kevin Pillar was hit in the face by a fastball on Monday. Well, yesterday he showed up at the ballpark after being told that he has multiple nasal fractures, and he spoke with reporters and seemed, generally speaking, pretty positive. Here is Pillar talking about on feeling lucky.
Feel good. I feel real good, actually. Despite not looking so good, I feel as close to normal as possible. The only tough thing is my right eye a little bit right now is suffering from a little bit of swelling, and I can't really breathe out of my nose. But besides that, I feel good. I feel lucky, and just kind of excited to start this recovery, get back doing what I like doing.
He was asked about why the number of hit by pitches are a record level.
It's a pretty simple, answer. Just, I think velocity has become the primary factor in determining whether a guy could pitch at the highest level of baseball, as opposed to pitchability. You're seeing more and more guys that throw hard, and teams are hoping that they could develop pitchability and control and a secondary pitch. You're not seeing as many guys that throw in the lower 90s or 90 that have very high pitchability with multiple pitches that get guys out. Those guys are kind of a dime a dozen now, but we are talking about something that happens very infrequently in this game. Someone actually being hit, in the head or in the face. I know it's maybe happened a couple of times this year, but it is part of the game.
Second baseman Rougned Odor was activated from the Yankees injured list on Tuesday, and the team also got good news regarding shortstop Gleyber Torres, who was cleared by the Major League Baseball and Major League Baseball Players Association Joint Committee after being placed in the COVID injured list a week ago. Let's get to the good stuff. The Blue Jays and the Red Sox in an incredibly competitive American League East, and it was a night in which the Blue Jays frolicked.
That ball is going to get down and go past Verdugo all the way to the warning track. Semien is in to score. Bo Bichette with another two-strike RBI. The double, his ninth of the season.
The great Buck Martinez, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Mets and the Braves. And in the top of the third inning, Jonathan Villar got the Mets going.
Pitch. Villar hits one deep in the air toward left center field. Ozuna races back, but it's long gone. Jonathan Villar pokes a two-run homer. The Mets have a 2-0 lead here in the third.
On the way to a 4-3 victory, that sound from WCBS. The Cardinals and Pirates and Nolan Arenado. He's on a roll.
Here's the 2-0 pitch now. Line drive into left center. Center fielder over, left fielder over, and it's a home run. Arenado, four home runs in a row now in game. Catching them all, and the Cardinals off to a 2-0 start.
Great Mike Shannon with that call on the Cardinals radio network. Yeah, the Cardinals went on to win 5-2. We're going to see Nolan Arenado and the Cardinals this Sunday night against the Chicago Cubs on Sunday Night Baseball. And we're scheduled to interview Nolan for our rapid fire back and forth on Friday to be shown in that broadcast. If anybody, you know, listeners have questions, you want me to throw it to Nolan about him personally, shoot me a note here on Twitter. Shohei Ohtani did it again for the Angels.
Next delivery, and this is a blast in the center field, and my goodness, it is way out of here. It clears the big hedges out there in dead center. Tape measure home run for Ohtani. Puts the Angels on the board here. It's now 5-1, and early tonight, it's showtime.
It was Terry Smith on Angels Radio. The Angels were down 5-1. They came back and tied the score 5-all, but Josh Naylor and the Indians had the last word.
Claudio, always from the stretch, delivers. And it's swung on, and that's lifted high in the air. Deep right field, and off the wall. Or is it? Home run? Home run, Naylor. Josh Naylor has put the Indians in front with a home run to right.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports. And you know who was making moves last night? How about Spencer Turnbull, the 28-year-old right-hander, a former second-round pick, the pride of the University of Alabama. He was rolling for the Tigers against the Mariners in Seattle, taking a no-hitter into the eighth inning.
The 3-2 pitch. He got him on the inside corner, backup slider. For a called third strike, Spencer Turnbull is through eight and has not allowed a hit.
That was Dan Dickerson on the Tigers radio network. Here was Turnbull, two outs in the ninth inning.
Turnbull sets the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss! History! Spencer Turnbull has become the sixth Tiger pitcher to throw the eighth no-hitter in franchise history. His teammates burst out of the dugout and mob him at the mound. How about it?
Dan Dickerson with that great call on the Tigers radio network. Turnbull afterwards spoke with the reporters about when he realized he had a no-hitter going.
Probably around the fifth inning. I was aware that I hadn't given up a hit the whole time, but I wasn't really thinking about it. It was about probably right after the fifth. I was like, all right, I'll keep this rolling. They keep hitting them right at people. We'll see what happens.
Now, we're going to be hearing later in the show from Spencer Turnbull about the no-hitter. He did an interview with SportsCenter last night. Before we get to Carl Ravich and DePaul Imbakides, ESPN Plus gives you live daily coverage of the PGA Championship from the Ocean Course at Kiawah Island this weekend, May 20th through the 23rd. Stream the exclusive main feed each morning, featured groups every day, and much more. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com/golf and keep up with all of the NBA postseason action by listening to the Hoop Collective, the Woj Pod, the Low Post, and Jalen Jacoby, wherever you get your podcasts. I know my son, if he listens, it'll be with a heavy heart because his Hornets last night were eliminated.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit
to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Carl Ravitch, host of Baseball Tonight, play-by-play man for ESPN. And Ravi, we got a ton of stuff to choose from today, a long menu. So I'll let you make the choice what direction we go. Do you want to talk about the tidal wave of no-hitters, the Mike Trout injury, or old school versus new school popping up again?
Well, the Trout injury stinks, so I'd rather not do that first because that colors a lot of things. Old school, new school. I'll take old school, new school for 1,000. Let's go there.
Okay. And this popped up the other day when the White Sox, in the White Sox game, when Yermín Mercedes facing the Twins swung at a 3-0 pitch, 47 miles per hour, and hit it about 400 feet for a home run. Tony La Russa was asked about that decision by Mercedes before yesterday's game. Here's the Hall of Fame manager.
I took several steps in the dugout onto the field yelling, take, take, take. Because just the way he was set up, I looked to me like he was going to swing. And the whole time he's around the bases, I'm out there and I'm, you know, I was upset because that's not a time to swing 3-0. And, as you know, I happened to look over there and I know the Twins knew that I was upset. You know, Joe, give him the take sign. I just think Yermín was locked into he and Estudillo. You know, they know each other from different competitions. And he was locked in, and really what he just, I got to get him. But he missed a 3-0 hit sign with that kind of lead. That's just, it's not over. That's just sportsmanship, respect for the game, respect for your opponent. He made a mistake.
So that was Tony La Russa essentially reflecting the old school thought before the game. And this is what happened during the game. Seventh inning, Tyler Duffy on the mound, Yermín Mercedes at the plate.
Enforcement deal on Twitter earlier today. Oh, see, now he threw at Mercedes. Look, that's from last night. Duffy threw at Yermín Mercedes. The umpires are going to come in and talk it over. We had a feeling this might happen. Let's make sure none of these shenanigans continue, because baseball is supposed to be fun, and why can't we just go ahead and play baseball? There. He's out of here.
He should be. Should be thrown out. The pitch was behind him. It wasn't meant to injure him because it was below the waist. Rocco Baldelli is going to say whatever he's going to say. He's going to be wrong about it, but he's going to say it. And look, usually when they throw out the pitcher, they also throw out the manager, which means Rocco is making his last stand.
And that's exactly what happened. Rocco Baldelli also was ejected. Those were the voices of Jason Benetti and Steve Stone. So, Ravi, I have strong feelings on this, but before I dive into my garbage, tell me what you thought.
Well, there's a lot of things going on there. First of all, La Russa, who I like and respect, made it a little bit about himself when he said, I was on the top step and I was yelling, take, take, take. And that's a Tony La Russa thing. And look, he's the manager. If he wants his team to behave that way, that's the manager's prerogative. It doesn't mean the players listen. And one of the things about this generation is they have their own ways of doing things. So the concept of old school, new school doesn't apply to current player. I think you have to just change from old school and new school to current school. And current school is such that we are an individual society. We are very demonstrative in our celebrations. And you have to kind of scrub disrespect 3-0 pitch. Again, maybe being of the age and generation I am, I wouldn't have, and I just put myself in the shoes of the hitter at that point. I probably don't swing 3-0, but I was groomed on an era or errors where in a game that's a blowout, you don't do that. I don't think that's the case anymore. I don't think there are any old school, new school. I think current is I'm seeing a pitch and he's going to throw 46. I want to swing at it. I'm going to swing at it. It's not personal. And so often we make these things personal. So I would just err on the side of forget old school, new school. Let's go current school. And we all, whether we're from old school or new school, have to adjust to current school. And current changes. It's literally like the current. They come and they go. They're a moving target. It's not black and white. And unwritten to me has always been moving target, not black and white. It's gray. It's the interpretation of the individual. So, you know, I understand the hill that Tony La Russa is standing on, but I think he's not standing on the same hill, obviously, that Yermy Mercedes is. The other part of it is if, in fact, he was giving a take sign and either chose to ignore it or didn't see it, that's a conversation for immediately after, whether it's in the tunnel or in the locker room after. I don't appreciate the way that you single out a player and use adjectives like clueless or anything else to describe, you know, a member of your own team. He's on your club. I think that could have and should have been handled differently.
I agree with you. And it's interesting. I mean, there can be no more old school pedigree than that of our longtime friend, Aaron Boone, who, of course, you know, is the third generation of three generations of Boone in Major League Baseball. And I remember a conversation with him a couple of years ago about the whole old school, new school thing. He said, you know, I'm probably more old school. And then he paused and said, but when you really think about it, a lot of the old school stuff is really stupid.
Yeah.
And I thought about this too, and I'm going to talk about it. I'm talking to you at just before 8 o'clock. I'm going to be on TV at 8:20. I'm going to say, when you really think about the hill that Tony La Russa is standing on here, and then maybe some members of the Twins, it's okay, according to the old school, to give up in a baseball game, to put a position player on the mound, lobbing 47 mile per hour meatballs. And if the other team swings when you don't want them to, it's okay to throw fastballs at them. That's colossally stupid. Now, you know, last night, Alex Woods, Trevor Bauer, others were tweeting about it. Alex Woods' tweet was, if there's a position player pitching in a big league game, all the quote unquote rules are out the window, in my honest opinion. Plus, do you all realize how hard it is to launch a 49 mile per hour pitch 400 feet? Give the people what they want. I'd say this, you know, Tony La Russa said when he arrived in spring training after more than a decade away from the game as manager, that he was going to listen to his players, that he wanted to have conversations with his players and get to know them and learn from them. I would suggest today, especially after watching the videotape of Tim Anderson's reaction in his dugout, basically pointing at the Twins dugout, and you know, and I'm only interpreting body language, essentially pointing at him like, get out of here with that stupid stuff, that maybe Tony ought to go talk to his players. And I completely agree with you about throwing his own player under the bus. That was absurd.
It'd be really interesting because we've seen this before with players that swing 3-0 in a 7-8-10 run game. I would bet, Buster, that Yermín Mercedes on his own, if a teammate asked him, not Tony La Russa, but a teammate asked him, I would be surprised if Yermín would say, yeah, I probably didn't need to, and I won't moving forward swing at a 3-0 pitch in a 10-run game. But I reserve the ability to change my mind. Again, this is such a generational commentary that, and I think Aaron Boone swims in the three pools you talked about. You know, the generations that all played, including himself, and now managing, you know, guys that are basically young enough to be his own children in some cases, he has to live in different pools. La Russa is making that adjustment. But going back to just my original point, I think Mercedes, if he's asked today, hey, you know, do you have any second thoughts about the way that played out? He might say, yeah, without Tony La Russa's input or anyone else's, okay, I understand it. I didn't understand it. I kind of get it now, and maybe I wouldn't have done that. But look, I always err on the side of this is a competition. I don't care if he's throwing 46 or 146. He's on the mound to try to move this game along, get me out, have me either swing and hit into an out, strike out, put the ball in play, hit a homer. Like, we're still competing. We are still, the game isn't over. So I don't like dictating the rules of the game. I never really enjoyed it. That's why anytime we talk about, you know, what would you do to speed up the game, I would never change the rules of the game where you can't have people shifting, et cetera. I try to take the game, and if I want to make it seven innings, I'm not changing the rules by which they play. They're playing a game. Let them play the game.
Yep.
Let it play out. Don't dictate it.
Yeah, and I would ask the Twins this. I'd ask whoever was upset in that dugout. I'd ask Tyler Duffy, hey, Tyler, if the Twins scored seven runs, let's say they happened to rally. They were, the pitcher lost the plate. Yep. They scored seven runs. Would you guys still be trying to win, or would you basically quit at that point? Of course they'd still be trying to win, right? And that's the part I agree 100%. With you 100%. If you want to lay down and you want to quit and put a position player out there, that's great. That's your decision. That's better for your team to save pitching. I totally get that. But stop worrying about what the other team is doing. Let them yep. do what they're – let them be them. Which I think would also reflects the current generation. All right.
That's the whole point.
Yep. Let's get the Mike Trout injury out of the way. I look, how many years have we been saying baseball needs to get its best player on the biggest stage, the postseason, playoffs and World Series. We need to get Mike Trout into October baseball, and it looks like it's not going to happen again because the Angels are already seven games out of first place. And now they've lost Trout for 6 to 8 weeks. And it's not only about not having Trout in the postseason. It's about not having probably the most talked about player in baseball, Shohei Ohtani, in the playoffs as well. You hate that Mike Trout is out. You hate that that the Angels are going to probably miss the playoffs again, according to Fangraphs, just a 13% chance to make the postseason.
Yeah, this is not a knock on you, but I don't agree that baseball needs Mike Trout in the playoffs. The Angels need Mike Trout in the playoffs. This is an Angels issue. You mentioned Ohtani. The Angels seem to do a really good job collecting offensive players or finding them. Whether it's Walsh, they get Rendon, they have Trout, they have Ohtani. The Angels need to figure out how to identify guys that can pitch and get people out and stay healthy. So, sure, as a sport, it'd be nice if Mike Trout was there. I don't particularly miss having Mike Trout in the postseason because that's not my objective. That's not baseball's objective. That's the Angels' objective. It'd be great if he were there because I think most of us would enjoy seeing him on that stage because he does things that nobody else does. Most people that love the sport would love to see Ohtani in the postseason. He's doing things that Babe Ruth did, and that's pretty much it. But that's not a baseball thing. That's an Angels thing, and they haven't gotten it right. And that's an indictment on the organization and the decisions that they've made that haven't allowed them to be competitive, in the division, let alone the league, let alone the sport. So, yeah, that would be a bonus. Like, to me, that's a bonus. Hey, it's really cool that Mike Trout's there the same way it was, really cool when LeBron's in the NBA Finals or, the Cowboys are somehow playing for a Super Bowl. There are things that kind of make it cool, but that's not the NFL's deal. That's not the NBA's deal. That's the Lakers. That's the Cowboys. That's the organization. And the Angels have not been able to figure it out, whether it's changing managers, a GM, buying players. They just haven't done it. The injury is devastating. They are over 500 in games he plays by like 25 and under by like 25 when he doesn't. It's a disaster. You could see his frustration when he slammed his helmet. It's clear he's in a lot of pain. It's really, really bad for the Angels. Again, it stinks for the sport. The games are going to be far less competitive. But this is an Angels thing. That's how I look at those things. It's not a baseball decision. We need him there. Sure, it'd be nice, but that's an Angels decision.
Yep. We've got two more topics. We got about 3 minutes to go. One last thing on Trout. In texting folks around baseball last night about soft tissue injuries, they had a lot of thoughts, and I will share them on the podcast tomorrow. The tidal wave of no hitters. Spencer Turnbull throws another no hitter, the fifth for baseball this year. The record is 8 in any given season. The general manager who predicted in April that there would be 15 to 20, it looks like he's going to be right, Carl. I'll ask you the same question they're going to ask me on TV. Is this a good thing for baseball?
Yeah, to me, no hitters are exciting. Like, I think a potential no hitter is good. I think it's a terrible reflection on the direction of the game offensively. I think there are things that are now, you know, being considered that would help improve the ability to put the ball in play. You keep hearing teams saying, if you put the ball in play, good things can happen. We've seen it time and time again. Get the ball on the ground, move a runner from second to third. I asked our friend Sarah Langs the other day about advancing runners from second, and the percentage of runners that are on second base with no outs who end up on second base with three outs has dramatically risen over the last 20 years. They get stuck there. And that's a huge that's a huge problem in baseball, because it speaks to why we have no hitters. And again, it's not rocket science. There's an all or nothing approach. So you're not seeing balls in play. You're not seeing guys get singles and doubles. You're seeing guys either strike out or hit homers. So look, a no hitter is exciting. If you get to the point where it's like a home run, which lacks excitement relative to when we didn't have so many, that's going to be a problem. But I'm into the no hitters. I still think they're rare. Obviously, if we get 15 of them, that's a whole hell of a lot. But there's 162 games for 30 teams. If you have 15, that's really small on the scale of the number of games. But yeah, you're starting to be like, okay, well, the novelty of that's going to wear off if you keep those numbers up. And it's good on a day-to-day. You got a ticket to the game, that's cool. But you don't want to see many no-hitters. No, I don't think you want to have too many of them.
Record low batting averages, record high strikeout rate. And give me a quick thought on Kevin Pillar yesterday, who we were all happy to see him in front of a camera talking about how he was asking about whether or not he was going to be in the lineup.
I know, it was cute. Yeah, he showed up. He said, am I in the lineup today? And he did point out that he had the game-winning RBI, and we can speak light of it now. We did the game, and there was such a terrible uniqueness to the sound. This wasn't a case of, did that glance off the helmet? Did that hit his shoulder first? You knew exactly where that ball made its first contact. And to see him hand the lineup card and just be out there and have that attitude, that's what made him great as a kid. He played every sport. He was riding dirt bikes when he was a kid. He's not afraid of any of that stuff. But this isn't a badge of honor or courage. He was incredibly lucky. And his attitude about it and the way that he sort of was able to empathize with Jacob Webb was unbelievable. He knew that guy was going through hell, and Kevin will for the next couple of weeks, obviously, as he recovers. But that was the scariest thing as I've ever seen, and the sound is what will resonate with me for a long, long time. You just knew that result was going to be really bad. But I'm so delighted to see him where he's at.
All right, Robbie, good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime, Buster. Be good, buddy.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Last night, Spencer Turnbull spoke with John Anderson on SportsCenter after his no-hitter. Give a listen.
The man of the hour is with us right now. Spencer, tell me, what goes through a man's head immediately after he throws the last out of a no-hitter?
I don't know if there's any specific thoughts more than just that, you know, primal scream. I don't know, man. It was absolutely surreal. Just pure energy.
Never had a complete game before. You're up there 117 pitches. How's the arm right now?
feels great right now. We'll see how it feels tomorrow, but right now it feels fantastic.
Just going to be hanging, right? At what point do we start thinking about this thing?
Just hanging. Probably around the fifth inning. I was aware that I hadn't given up a hit the whole time, but I wasn't really thinking about it. It was about probably right after the fifth. I was like, all right, I'll keep this rolling. They keep hitting them right at people. We'll see what happens.
And then at what point, when was the last time a teammate said anything to you?
They kind of stopped talking to me around the seventh or so. But I got a couple fist bumps and a few of those things, but definitely felt the energy shift a little bit. Everybody kind of just wanted to leave me alone.
Mm-hmm. And that would seem lonely. How do we lock in and focus knowing what could happen, but, you know, any pitch, we could spoil that?
I mean, honestly, I don't really know. I've never been here before. So I said, I was just trying to stay within myself, just keep making pitches, and hopefully they keep hitting at people or keep missing barrels. And praise God, it worked out. But it was pretty freaking awesome.
We thought it was pretty freaking awesome, too. Tell me, what was the best pitch of the night that you threw?
I feel like I threw a really good curveball. I think it was to Seager earlier in the game. Mm-hmm. I threw a really good kind of cut four-seamer in the ninth to second hitter. Mm-hmm. After I walked the first guy, and then the last sequence to the Hanger, I think all three of those pitches were perfectly executed.
Those were all endorsed by John Buccigross as certified beauties. And then just give me one in there that maybe you got away with.
I feel like there were several I might have gotten away with. I spun a few sliders, got a couple strikeouts on some, you know, back me ups. But yeah, that's part of it. I threw some really good ones that they didn't swing at, and I threw some that kind of backed up that they swung through. And said, fortunately for me, things went my way, and the balls they hit hard hit right at somebody. Candy caught one earlier in the game, was an absolute rocket. And just like I said, a lot of ground balls that fortunately didn't get through any holes, and was able to finish it out for what's probably the best night of my life.
That's fantastic. Well, do you have kids? Because that will top it eventually.
I don't have any kids of my own yet. But
yeah,
I got a lot of people I'm going to celebrate with.
Very good. Before we let you go, just give us a rundown of all the things that have been thrown on you since that last out.
All the products.
Oh, there's no telling. It started with some shaving cream.
Yep.
It's still all in my ears and my mouth and everywhere else. And then right before this, I think beer shower with some baby powder. And
sure.
Who knows what else, but I'm absolutely soaked right now.
Right. So you would say right now you're a good-smelling man, or you are just a swamp?
I'm smelling something. I don't know what it is, just what's all mixed in, but it's definitely mostly beer, I think, but we'll have to see when I take a shower.
All right, well, go in there and don't let them waste one. Go ahead and pop one and knock it back and celebrate, and we'll see you again in 5 days, and you just do it again. It's so much fun.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
Jumping into the numbers. Numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, Paul Imbecchietti is a researcher for ESPN. He's also a honcho on the show Get Up, and he is, without a doubt, the keeper of the old school flame on this podcast. When we talk about old school versus new school, we got Hembo. And I can't remember the exact wording that I got in your email last night, but did you write something like Tony La Russa is God?
That's a good approximation of what I said, because you know, Buster, I'm the only person in the world that loves analytics, but also loves baseball's old, archaic, unwritten rules. And I happen to agree 100%. With the White Sox manager, Tony La Russa, that his player, Yermaine Mercedes, was out of line when he swung at that pitch on Monday night. And who am I to tell Tony La Russa, who has forgotten more about baseball than I will ever know, how he should or shouldn't feel about baseball's sportsmanship? That guy's been in the game forever. The Twins threw behind Mercedes last night, in some sense, sort of validating La Russa's opinion, or perhaps the hit batsman, or the attempt at, in doing so was perhaps spawned by La Russa's comments. Who knows? All of that to say, I think we can have very reasonable disagreement about this, especially something so trivial. Like, to me, the old school, new school tug of war between amongst baseball, those in the community right now, is an attractive, it's a good thing for the game. And to me, there's no obvious reason for us to feel like we need to universally agree upon anything. This conversation in and of itself, to me, Buster, is one of the best things baseball has going for it.
I mentioned on Get Up this morning, as I was talking with Carl, I think Tony La Russa needs to go talk to his players, as he did at the outset of spring training, and you know, have conversations with the likes of Tim Anderson about how players feel about this stuff now, because I think he hasn't heard or is not listening or whatever it is. He's not absorbing what they're saying. And one of the things that I think he would hear about, and Carl Ravage made reference to this in his when we just talked to him, he said, you know, that whole thing about when you're calling out one of your own players with on the media, that probably is not going to go over very well with his current generation.
I think that you're probably right. That's a fair place to come from. I guess I would retort by saying two things. One, it appears to me that Tony La Russa is doing a really good job at this baseball team, considering it's the best team in baseball right now, and they're without two of their best players, for starters. And secondly, I wouldn't have taken the old school opinion I took here just because. I actually went back and looked at the context, Buster, and I found that over the last 20 years, I went back to 2002, over the last 20 years, there had been 557 pitches thrown in a 3-0 count with that batter's team up by more than 10 runs, the exact situation that we encountered on Monday night. And Mercedes' swing on Monday night was the first time anyone over that period of time swung at such a pitch. So, like you said, baseball is changing and people, the characters across the game are evolving, and I'm good with that. But to say that we should throw out all the rules that we, you know, we've abided by for, you know, hundreds of years, for lack of a better term, to me is silly. Like, we have rules in football. When you're up by 3 touchdowns, you don't throw a Hail Mary with 20 seconds to go. If you're up by 40 points in a basketball game, the shot clock expires at the end of the game, you don't go dunk. And this is sort of, to me, like, that's probably those are the best cross-sport comparisons I would make. I'm not good with it. And the recent historical context says no one else has been good with it either.
Real quick, Tyler Duffy's pitch, you know, there were folks saying last night, well, he threw behind him and that's the way you do it. He didn't actually hit him. I thought he was trying to hit him. I think he just missed.
He was. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do think he was trying to hit him. And I think that he just missed, which unfortunately is something that we're seeing all across the game right now, because as you've identified many times on this podcast, nobody knows how to throw inside anymore, which is such a dangerous thing. And I do applaud the umpiring crew for tossing him on the spot. The only way that we're going to sort of eliminate some of this frontier justice is to really penalize these pitchers and their managers when they take matters into their own hands. You know, I love it because I'm an old school guy, and I think the charm of all of this is a good thing for the sport, but Major League Baseball has a responsibility to protect its players. And I think the ejection in that circumstance was obviously warranted.
You know, and it also, you know, rather than throwing baseballs at someone, how about Rocco Baldelli pick up the phone and call Tony La Russa and said, look, do you mind if I talk to your player, your main Mercedes, and just get him on the phone after the other night and said, this is the way I feel about it. Okay, we're moving on.
I'm good with that. I'm totally good with that. And I'm also not good with Baldelli using a position player in that context, which is something that you mentioned on the TV show this morning. Like, that to me has to be a part of this too. I think using position players as pitchers late in the game is making a complete mockery of baseball. And to me, it's much worse than anything that Mercedes did. I hate position players pitching and think that should absolutely be eliminated in the next cycle of the collective bargaining agreement. That to me is a black eye on baseball. That, like, there are some people sort of on the outskirts of the internet that like it. I'm not among them. To me, it's something of a joke.
All right, what do you got on the no-hitters? Number five last night.
Well, number five last night, number six, if you buy into the notion that Madison Bumgarner, his should count. It's the first time since 1917, Buster, that we've had five pitchers before the end of May. And I'll say this. I think this is something that we're going to keep seeing more and more of, not just this season, Buster, but in future seasons, unless Major League Baseball does something drastic. Some numbers were brought to my attention earlier this week. First, in the minor leagues, which is experiencing a much higher percentage of three true outcomes there right now than we are in Major League Baseball, which is to say, like, it's coming down the pipe. Further down, Buster, the pipeline, this has really been the year of the pitcher in college baseball. You follow college baseball as much as I do. The strikeout rate's at an all-time high. Their no-hitters are also at an all-time high, which is to say, Major League Baseball, the players at Major League Baseball are, in some sense at least, a byproduct of the pipeline, of the showcase circuit, of all the young players that, you know, trickle their way up to the big leagues. And if this is something that is being becoming so much more common at the lower level of baseball, it's not obvious to me how Major League Baseball is going to shake this anytime soon. All this to say, this is not an isolated thing in Major League Baseball. It is at all of the levels of baseball, both in the amateur ranks and in the collegiate ranks.
I would say this, you know, going back 3-4 years, I was advocating to reduce, you know, to limit the number of pitchers used in each game, which require more reliance on the starting pitchers, means less velocity. I think that would absolutely help the sport. But I have no indication that's actually being seriously discussed. Your Phillies had a dugout confrontation the other day between Joe Girardi, Gene Segura. What'd you make of that?
Buster, Joe Girardi is absolutely in the right here. He has every right to be furious over his team's defense. He's in his second season as manager, and during that time, the Phillies ranked dead last in the National League in defensive runs saved. They ranked dead last in the National League in defensive efficiency. They ranked dead last in the National League in batting average on balls in play allowed. We're talking about 102 games now. This isn't just a small sample, which a lot of people in Philadelphia were arguing last year. The bullpen of the defense was just a small sample. No, it's not. And Joe Girardi has every right to be upset at his players who can't make the routine play. You don't, in order to win baseball games in 2021, you don't need to have Omar Vizquel and Roberto Alomar playing up the middle for you. But you need to be able to catch the balls that are hit to you. And the Phillies can't even do that right now. So do I love that the manager sort of exploded publicly? No, I don't. But I also think that he absolutely has the right to do so, especially for a veteran player. And I, for one, do not at all appreciate how Segura responded. Like, I think that's just as much a part of this conversation. I have zero issue with Joe Girardi acting this way because of the pressure that you've illustrated on this podcast that he is carrying within this season. And in fact, this is an issue that is just not going away.
All right, what do you have on Shohei Ohtani?
Buster, I love this note. So you know the statistic win probability added, which sort of quantifies the percent change in a team's chances from winning one event to the next. It does so by measuring the importance of a given plate appearance in the context of the game. It's a really useful stat for measuring both hitters and pitchers. And Buster, as we all know, now know, Shohei Ohtani is doing both of those things really, really well. So far this season, Ohtani leads all of baseball in that metric at 2.9 win probability added. That is 30% clear of anybody else in the majors. So that's, again, what you did and when you did it. He is by a long shot the most valuable player in baseball right now.
That's awesome. All right, Hembo, love work with you. I'm sure I'll be talking with you again soon. Oh, that's right. Doing radio with you in about an hour to 2.5 hours. I'll talk to you soon.
And look, just 10 seconds, Buster. I could not do this podcast today without just mentioning how just ridiculously disappointed I am in Taylor Schwenk for only being able to knock down 40 drinks over the weekend. Taylor, you're such a lightweight.
Wow. Are you kidding me, Hembo? You come on.
Hembo, in all seriousness, Hembo, all kidding aside, what do you think your lifetime record is of 3-day total?
You know what? I think I'd probably have to take the under on 40. Just because I don't quite have the engine that Taylor does, but I will have to say this, like for a 3-day bachelor party weekend situation, like he was a part of, and look, Taylor is proficient in his eating and drinking habits. I was expecting the number to be closer to 60. Like I saw the line in Vegas at 49.5. That's the line that I saw. So I took the over, Taylor. So you cost me a bunch of money.
All right, we'll settle this one day, Hembo. Wiffle ball, beer drinking, where there's a lot of scores to settle around these parts.
Yeah, we do. And I'll tell you what, the way we'll work this is that Hembo, you and Taylor drink a lot, and then I'll face you in wiffle ball and see how you do.
We'll call that dizzy bat.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. First up, we have Nick Murray at NickMurray91. He writes in, is Yasmani Grandal getting enough credit for the White Sox success so far? Basic stat line isn't anything huge, but he's having a career year. An expected weighted on base average. He put the shorthand for this. I had no idea what that was. That he's 390 hard hit percentage, exit velo, and barrel percentage, not to mention the walks.
Yeah, I can't remember when I talked to Sarah yesterday for the podcast. I can't remember if we talked about it during your segment or just before, but we were talking about Grandal and how terrific he's been. And as we talked about with Sarah yesterday, look, it feels like that whatever we do to talk about the White Sox these days, it's not enough because they're playing that well. Yasmani Grandal playing that well.
Last one for today, we have Jesse Pruitt at Jesse_Pruitt. He writes, and what level on the panic meter would you put the Braves at right now? It's still early, but it seems like nothing's working for them right now. We need like some sort of panic meter bit because we get these questions all the time. It fluctuates throughout the year. I'd imagine it can't be too high for the Braves right now. But what do you think, Buster?
Yeah, I think we need a declaration. It's time to panic.
Yes.
I'd put it at about a 5. On one hand, you're right. Jesse, nothing is going right. They've had these pitching injuries, whether it's Mike Soroka having the setback and, you know, having the exploratory surgery on his Achilles, or the one the other day with Enoa breaking his hand by punching the bench. But on the other hand, it's not like anybody's grabbing that division by the throat, which buys the Braves, it buys the Phillies, it buys the Mets, the Nationals, the Marlins time to try to figure out their issues.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And happy John Means Day to those who celebrate.
That's it for today. My thanks to Carl, Hembo, Taylor, and Spencer Turnbull. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.